Welcome to the Ultra Runner Magazine podcast, and today we'll be speaking to the inspirational Anna Rutherford. Anna has just set a new ladies' fastest known time on the 214-mile race across Scotland, the Southern Upland Way.
But actually, I couldn't have asked for better weather. There was hardly any wind. It wasn't too hot. It was almost perfect running weather, really. So lucky, because I'm not sure. Looking out now, it's like, gosh, if it had been, because this time last week I was running.
Yeah, it's with the Southern Uplands, when there's wet weather, the water doesn't go anywhere. It literally just makes the course really, really boggy, doesn't it? It's definitely something else to kind of like add to the contributing factors in the race and the stresses, isn't it? And foot care and things like that,
Because Jack was saying to me he had like proper trench foot, and I literally couldn't planned it. It was just a complete fluke, but it was dry, but it was almost wet enough, like it we'd had a couple of days of rain that actually softened the ground up a bit, that you couldn't make it up,
no, that's great. I mean, basically the weather's only one kind of one of the factors, but you've been planning this for a long time now, haven't you?
Yeah, a long time, because I was meant to do your race the first year it was run, and it was, I think it was your race started on the Saturday, and I found out on the Tuesday I was pregnant. I mean, it was literally that close. I had all my drop bags packed and everything. I was completely ready to go, and was just like, I couldn't put my body through that. In the very kind of early stages of pregnancy, I was like, I don't think the pregnancy would survive, so I'm going to have to pull out. So there was a definite sense of unfinished business. And then when Jack got in touch with Neil for his attempt in October and did a leg with him, that really sowed the seed. And I was like, could I do this? Is this actually possible? But I'd just given birth. So I was like, well, I don't know if my body can actually do something like this, but why not try? So I did.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you did. I mean, basically, so that we kind of got a bit more background, this isn't, your first time that you've kind of ventured into ultramarathons. You've got a long history of endurance and taking on these kind of challenges. Tell us a little bit about, your previous kind of history prior to the babies coming along, really.
Yeah, so I do. I did my first ultra in 2010, and then from there did, maybe a couple of races a year, longer distances, and had a break. Break's probably the wrong word. Had a spell of 5 years in that when I did Ironmans instead, because I found I was injuring myself a lot. I wasn't a very savvy runner, I guess. I just ran. That's all I did. I went out and just ran and didn't do any strength work, didn't do anything else. And so I was injuring myself a lot. And it's so frustrating, that cycle of injury. And so went into Ironmans, and that definitely gave me some good habits, adding in the gym work, adding in like the Pilates, adding in the rest time as well, and also working to a running schedule. So it was from there that I kind of picked up that periodization training, where I basically do 4 weeks on, 1 week off, and have a kind of build phase and then up to a peak phase before the race, and then a kind of rest period, and sort of worked like that, and it worked really, really well. And touched words, and I am touching words, since then it's kept injuries at bay. It really makes a huge difference. So I did Deadwater, which was running from Scotland to Wales. That was a multi-day event, and that was a few years ago, and I won that, although There were only two women in the end that finished it. There were more that started, but the weather was terrible. And so quite a few people pulled out. And same with, I've won some kind of local races, things like the Glencrest Marathon and a few, like the Tweed Valley Ultra and some races around here. And I think that's really it. I've done the CCC and then the route of the UTMB I did every year before having Kit and Ella, and I would just do it myself over about 2.5, 3 days, which was great training. Loved it, absolutely loved just being out there for 3 days in
Spectacular.
solitude. It's quite an experience.
Yeah, no, that's it's really interesting what you say in terms of the variation in your training and the rest and like how you approach a race, because that is something which some people just kind of are used to anyway, go from race to race to race to race. So do you have a coach, or did you have a coach there?
No, I don't.
Brilliant.
But when I was doing triathlons, I did have a coach because that's just kind of what you did as a triathlete. You had a huge Excel spreadsheet that you spent hours filling in, and you had a coach. That's just what you did. So I did have a triathlon coach, and he was fantastic. And it was him, all those lessons that he taught me, I
Drilled in.
stuck with. Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect. Great investment, man. Great investment.
Yeah.
Tell me about preparing for the Southern Upland Way. What did you when did you make the decision to kind of go for it? And what did you have to put in place, i.e. your support team?
Yeah, so I probably made the decision towards the end of last year, and I initially, and actually even right up until the race itself, because my poor support team, but I never really thought I would go for the record. I thought, well, I wanted to, so I tried to put in place a kind of time that was very similar to Rosie's time, because I didn't think for a second that I could do it any quicker than that. And so it was really towards the end of last year that I started training. But it's hard when you, well, it's hard any time, but having two little people makes it particularly difficult. And so I mean, it was Neil really. He did all the hard work. He's absolutely, he believed in me more than I believed in myself. He's been so supportive, but he doesn't start work till about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and then he works, late on into the evening. So he was taking the kids all morning so that I could go for a run and then just go straight off to work. It was unbelievable. So I put in place a kind of training plan from there, and just scheduled in. I made sure I had a long run every week of 50 to 60 miles. And then in the kind of peak phase, a few weeks before the attempt, I did a couple of kind of 75, 80 mile runs, and they were quite eye-opening because the difference between 50 and 80 is much bigger than I thought it would be. I was quite comfortable running those 50 mile runs, and then as soon as it became longer than that, it became so much more difficult, disproportionately in terms of the time. And so yeah, that was the kind of plan put in place. I literally couldn't have done. I honestly feel like I haven't done the hard work. The people that have done the hard work, that wonderful group of friends who agreed to support me, giving up wages, a lot of the self-employed, giving up holiday. Jack drove through the night. Poor Lucy, who hates nighttime running, ended up being up for 2 nights without sleep because I was so far ahead of schedule. And everyone just invested so much and agreed to do so much for me. It was really humbling, really, really special for them to do that for me. And I got back to about 700, well, yeah, it was 751 WhatsApp messages I got back to, and that was
Amazing.
all my support runners and Stevie and Izzy, who are just, they were the band support, and they are incredible runners themselves. So they know exactly what you need, and they knew exactly what I needed at any point. But it was all messages of from Stevie or Izzy, and plus the runners saying, right, you need to be here at this point, right, what does Anna need at this point, right, she wants potatoes, can someone give her potatoes, like, right, I'm good. It was just, it was incredible. Because all I had to do was keep moving. That was my only, I had such an easy job in a way. It was crawl, walk, run, just keep moving towards the coast. That's all you need to do, that's all you need to think about. It was everyone else that made it possible.
Well, I think it just kind of shows, emphasizes that the teamwork and the communication is just so important, you know, coming into a support point and just them looking after you, you know. And it's really, really humbling and nice to see, you know, that kind of side of things. And that's I think that's one of the things that we really love about the ultra running community, isn't it, you know. It's a special thing.
Yeah, I mean, one of the first people to congratulate me was Rosie, and I don't even really know her, and she sent me a message saying that's fantastic, you know, huge, well done. And I was running with Jack, you know, to run with the guy who holds the male record, and he was the guy that had driven through the night. So because I was so far ahead of schedule that his public transport plans went completely out the window, so we just, you know, got in the car and drove. And it's like, for people to do that, it just shows what a fantastic community the running community is, because the support that I've had since being back is just phenomenal.
In terms of the schedule that's approaching the attempt itself, what kind of schedule did you put together? Was it based on Breaking Rose's record, or was it kind of like for a certain kind of time that you wanted to achieve?
Yeah, it was based on Breaking Rosie's record. So Rosie sits about kind of 79 hours something. And so I went for 75 hours. And so that gave me a bit of a buffer. And I based it on my experience of the Southern Upland Way, because you get onto that trail and you seem to adopt a new pace that's just so much slower than any regular running pace. And certainly for the West sections, they're really tough, and so I wanted to allow myself a lot more time for those sections. And as you get closer to Coburn's path on the east, it becomes easier. There's more track, it's wider path, and so I didn't just say I'm going to run 3 or 4 miles an hour and then divide it like that. I looked at each section and based it on what I'd done previously for that section and my knowledge of how difficult a section it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although I completely messed it up, didn't I? I really couldn't have got it more wrong.
Well, that's it's great.
The plan was there.
It's a good problem to have, isn't it, being ahead, you know? The 79 hours was the time to be. What time did you complete it in?
62 and a half, basically. Amazing. So 62 hours. 34 minutes, 55 seconds. So it was about 70, over 17 hours off Rosie's time, and a day, you know, more than a day ahead of my own schedule.
Yeah.
It was beyond my wildest dreams getting that time.
That's an amazing record that you've really kind of set the standard there. The course itself, Southern Upland Way, tell me about it.
Are so rugged and remote and beautiful, the Southern Upland Way. You can go for days and not see anyone, and you have every single variation under the sun. You're running along coastlines, you're running through forest, you're running over a lot of open hillside, and then you're running on big forestry tracks. It's got absolutely everything, and the views and the at the top of some of the climbs, and you've got the striding arches that you're running past sculptures. It's remarkable, and because it is so it's just not a well-trodden path, and because it is so remote, you can see the most incredible wildlife. We were coming into the first night, I was with Andrew, and we saw 12 deer just wandering around. It's just like, wow, that's just that, that's incredible. You wouldn't see that like ordinarily. It's a very special route, isn't it? It holds a very special place in the heart, and I think it would be lovely if more people knew about it, because you really can very often not see a soul. I was doing recce's for your race a few years ago. I don't think I saw anyone for 3 days.
It's not a bad thing in a way, because it's kind of like you have that kind of you time, don't you? You know, but it does make you think how something so wonderful can just be not really on people's map, you know, which is I think, you know, yourself and the events, hopefully, you know, we'll bring a bit more traffic to the trail, you know. So you know the Southern Upland Way really, really well then, I take it?
Yes, I do. There's sections I know much better than others, because getting over to the west side is quite hard. It's a 4-hour drive, you know, for me to get over to the start. But then I'm within 20 minutes of the trail from here. The sections around here I know really well. And I'd say probably from Beetock, I know it really, really well. Yeah. But the further west sections, don't know at all. And that new high route, I had only done once before I actually did the attempt itself. What a route that high route is.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? On the cat's shoulder coming down there. It is nice, isn't it? Basically navigation then, it's would you say that that's one of the most important aspects of any attempt?
Yes, definitely. I didn't get it completely right. I ended up running 216 miles, but for the most part, we were pretty much spot on. There were parts that I was off the path, such as it was, by maybe 20 meters or so, and that made it really, really difficult, because you're kind of trudging over doll's heads. And so then I did use the map a bit to get us back on the track, but for the most part we were spot on, and that was all down to my support runners. Every single one of them had recce'd their section, so every single one of them knew which way to go and knew the sections that didn't have paths, and so would, you know, take a bearing and say, you know, it's this direction, because the posts are great. And so actually during the day you've got posts, that's fantastic, but at night you can't see the posts, and when you lose the posts they've gone. So that's the problem with it, is you can go off ever so slightly and then you can't see posts anymore, and then it's trying to get yourself back on track. So you know it, that section, you know, the St John's Sanker section, that's really tough navigationally, I think.
Leaving Dalry is it can be, can't it? Definitely, absolutely, completely one of the overriding factors, really, isn't it, you know, on that route. What about sleep? What did you do for sleep at these kind of support points?
So sleep was fatigue probably was one of the biggest factors I underestimated. I knew I'd be tired. Of course I'd be tired. I would, you know, going without sleep. And in my thought process, I just left it there. Oh, I'll be tired, that's fine. I'll just sleep when I'm tired. But there was a point during the second night where I physically couldn't open my eyes, and it was the oddest sensation. I would close my eyes to blink and I physically couldn't open them again. I think having a head torch on probably didn't help, but it was just, I was swaying all over the place because I couldn't really focus, and I just couldn't really do anything. And so I tried to eat something, and that made no difference at all. And so Jen and I realized that it was sleep. I was just utterly exhausted. I was so, so ruined. Yeah. And it was cold anyway, but I was shaking a lot through fatigue as much as the cold. Yeah. And that was the same leaving every van station, actually. I'd be shaking, wearing everything under the sun. My poor support runners would end up having to carry it after about half a mile because I was fatigued. So what I did on that second night, I tried to sleep at the top of the Three Brethren, and Jen wouldn't let me because she said, it's minus one, you're going to freeze. So we went down off the top of the Three Brethren, and I slept on a tuft of grass that I will never walk past again and not look at. And I was asleep. She gave me 4 minutes. I was properly asleep in those 4 minutes. Yeah. And then at the van point, it was basically a number divisible, but, you know, 45 minute sleep cycle I went on. So I divided that number, so it would be either 22 minutes or 11 minutes. But basically it was like 11 minute bursts. So I might have two lots of 11 minutes, but that was the most that I'd have. And it would be like a shot in the arm having that sleep. Yeah. It would be exactly what my body needed. But boy, did I underestimate it. I was really, really tired. And it sounds like such an obvious thing to say, and in a way I'm such an idiot for not realizing, but that tiredness had a huge impact.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you approached it and it was managed in the best way possible with your support team, knowing full well what you needed when you needed it, you know, and you know, trying to kind of help you in as far as that. What would you say your total sleep for the duration was?
It wouldn't have been more than an hour and a half. Really? I think it probably was even a bit less than that, actually. Wow. Because I didn't sleep for the first 24 hours, and then from 24 hours in, I at every van point, I maybe had 11 or 22 minutes plus that 4 minute power nap. Yeah. And then obviously didn't at the end, towards the end, because I was just wanting to get there. So I'd say yes, somewhere around the hour and a half mark, maybe an hour, an hour and a half.
That's amazing. That really is. In terms of your low points during the actual attempt itself, what were you feeling? When were you feeling it? What kind of, were there certain kind of sections like the Garo Gill, the climb on the and descent of Cat's Shoulder? Was there any points where you kind of really hit the wall, would you say?
Yeah, that second night when I was really struggling with sleep, I probably hit the wall. And then again, the other point where I really struggled was coming into the second morning when going over Lowther Hill just at Wanlock Head.
Yeah.
And then that whole section from Wanlock Head to Beetock, I really struggled with being sick. And Lucy was absolutely amazing. And that's where the stop cubes come in. It's like stop cube gate. But because she's so experienced, she knew exactly what to do to reset my stomach. But I was really struggling because mentally, and it sounds stupid saying it out loud, but mentally I was breaking it down into, right, in 4 miles I can have a bit of, you know, I don't know, a rice cake, or I can have a pretzel, you know, lucky me. And so I was actually looking forward to points where I could eat, because it was a way for me to mentally cope with the distance and be able to break it down.
Yeah.
And then when I actually couldn't face any food, it was taking not only the nutrition away from me, but also it was mentally becoming a lot more difficult. And so Lucy just completely reset my stomach, but that was a real low point. And I think whenever I did have low points, I missed the kids so much anyway, but I missed them more, you know, and just so desperate to see them that I would get my support runner to text Neil and say, can I just have some more photos of the kids? And it would really lift me up, really. And seeing them coming in to St Mary's Loch, or just sent me over the edge. I had no idea they would be there. I don't know how Neil made it happen. He had the toughest job over those few days, but he did, and the kids were there. And it was just seeing them, oh, it just lifted me. It was so, so special.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, doesn't it? It makes a big difference.
Oh, huge.
That's the overriding thing, you know. You know, basically, that's all you can think about is, you know, I wonder what they're doing, especially if you hadn't been away from the kids for very long previously. So tell me, how old are your children now?
So Ella's just turned 9 months. She turned 9 months the day before I started running, and Kit turned 2 in April. So he's
Amazing.
only just 2 as well. And I was, desperate to show them that you can achieve what you want to achieve, and whatever they want to do in life, I will help them do it. And if someone like me, I'm so normal. There's nothing special about me at all. If I can achieve my dreams, then anyone can, and they can. And if I've managed to show them that, I mean, they're too young to realize now, but if they in a few years' time think, well, mummy did that, so maybe I can, maybe I can do it. Maybe I can have more courage and faith in myself, then that's all I could possibly want. That's been a huge tick in the box.
I think everybody would agree that we all think that you're something special. You know, you're something amazing, really. And what you've done is it's really turned a lot of people's heads at a time of where people need that kind of inspiration. And that's the thing to remember there, Anna. You know, and you've always been like that. You've always been like that. You've always been really kind of competitive and had that switch that you wanted press. And I think that's I think it is really, really amazing what you've done on that, you know. Do you think that there's a message to people that's you know, young mothers or mothers who have recently given birth? Is it a message there as well that listen, this is what I can do.
100%. I was able to do this because of having kids, not in spite of them. And yes, your body goes through an unbelievable experience when you give birth, but it doesn't stop you from doing whatever it is you want to do. So for me, it was running, and it didn't stop me running, and I was able to run and to make the kids proud. But I do feel proud that, nine months after giving birth, I was able to do something like this. And it just shows you your body is incredibly resilient. And if that determination is there, if you've got that dream and you think, yeah, actually I really want to go for this dream, then you can. And having kids is no barrier to that. In fact, I think for me, it's made me stronger. So rather than be a barrier, it's actually facilitated me doing this. And then you look at these unbelievable athletes like Jasmine Parrish, smashing the spine record out of the water, beating every single man. And she's got a 15-month-old girl. And it's really, I'm very proud that to take the woman's record now to be within so close of Jack's record. And it feels like, so I think it's now within 7 hours of Jack's record. And that's leveling the playing field, isn't it? It's saying actually women are as good as men. And actually sometimes women are even better than men, especially over the longer stuff. That's a really powerful message. And yes, just because you have kids, that doesn't stop you running. In fact, it might even make you a better runner. It definitely changes your body, definitely. But I think mentally and physically, it might even make you stronger.
That's a very kind of special message, that, really, isn't it? You know. In terms of the journey itself, do you think that there are things that you would do differently? Looking back now, would you change anything about your approach to it or what you did during the event itself? Is there anything that you can take out of it and say, whether it's something that's, let's say, you'd take on another long distance challenge or the Southern Upland Way again in the future or anything like that? What would you say that you what the key kind of areas that you think that you could improve, or did it all kind of go according to plan?
It definitely didn't go according to plan because I ended up being so far ahead of schedule. I'm not sure I would change anything because if I changed anything, it would change the experience of it. But looking back, I'm sure if I go and do another long distance event, I would probably dissect this run and think, well, were the bits that I could do slightly differently? And I'd perhaps change. I'm not even sure I'd change. I'd definitely take stock cubes. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I would definitely, you know, I would stick with having the kind of salty, savoury. I didn't eat a single sweet thing until 5 miles before the end. Everything was savoury. Yeah. And I would probably try and find ways, and I don't even know how, but I would try and find ways to train my body to take on more food whilst I'm running, because I consumed about 2,000 calories, not all of it stayed down, and my Garmin said I burned 25,000. So that's a huge deficit, and that must have had an impact, that lack of nutrition. Yeah. So I think I would try and somehow train you, and I don't even know how you do it, somehow try and train your body. I did, well, it was Stevie and Izzy that did really well with foot care. Every single point they had my socks off and were checking my feet before I started the run. I had all of my feet taped, so to stop blisters, so I was covered in KT tape all around each toe and round my feet to stop blisters, and I ended up with not a single blister. So that I would definitely do the same, certain things the same again. Yeah, I think I probably would. I would look at it with a fine tooth comb and really analyse the points that I could do, could make improvements. I think probably nutrition is a big one. Yeah. I just wouldn't know how I'd do it. I'd perhaps also sleep earlier and have a better sleep schedule, rather than, you know, to get to the point where I had to sleep on the route for 4 minutes, I've done something wrong, haven't I? I mean, for the rest of the time, I was sleeping in the van and it was 11 minutes. It was very organized. But those 4 minutes were out of pure necessity.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So sleep plan and potential nutrition. Looking, revising that, having a good look at that. You certainly did, from where I saw you, I think 140 miles in, approaching St. Mary's Lock. Everything looks really, really solid, really intact. You looked really with it. But yeah, you know, the sickness was kind of like apparent, you know, the stomach issue. Other than that, you know, you looked absolutely brilliant, you know. Considering, you know, that you know, you're 140 miles in, amazing, really. What were the kind of emotions approaching Copath? How did it feel crossing that line and approaching the coastline?
Oh, so emotional. I knew after that A1 road crossing, that was the first point I really knew I was going to do it. And every single step was a step closer to seeing Neil, to seeing the kids. Every single step was me just getting there. So it didn't matter how fast I was going. And seeing that coastline, and you end up like 2 or 3 miles along the coast before you get into Coburn's Path, and I was just like, you know what, I'm going to do this, I really am going to finish this. Because the thing is, you never know. That's the thing with long distance routes, you could fall and twist an ankle, you can, you know, anything could happen. And it was only that point that I thought, I'm actually going to do this. And it was so emotional, because I knew from that point, I knew that my family were going to be there, my friends were going to be there, and to then turn that corner where you run down past the garage and see all of these people who were there for me and were there for, you know, the support team, it's indescribable in a way, the kind of emotion that hits you. And I think because you're so tired as well, so there were so many tears, tears of relief, of tiredness, of just utter exhilaration that I've actually done it. It almost seems incomprehensible that I was, you know, just a few days earlier was on that other coastline, and suddenly here, you know, the coast is here, because I'd been dreaming about it for days, it felt like, and then suddenly it was there. It was really remarkable.
Amazing. How did it feel seeing your children?
Oh, don't. I mean, it'll set me off. It was unbelievable to see, to have Kit running towards me, and he's in tears because he doesn't understand what's going on, and he's exhausted because it's 7:30 at night and he should be in bed. And Ella was so cross with me. She's only 9 months old, but she was properly cross with me. She was like, oh, you've left me for 4 days. No, I'm not going to. No, I don't want to have sex very much. And just seeing them and being able to hold Ella and hug Kit, and he was so excited and so, like, it was just, it was what I'd been dreaming of, to see them and to see Neil, and it was just like, wow, this is really it. This is like, this is probably one of the best feelings I've had in such a long time. Yeah. And I think because you're so tired as well, your highs get higher and your lows get lower, don't they? Yeah. So that feeling of utter exhilaration, it's almost hard to put into words. It does actually feel, and one of the articles did parallel this, and that they were right. It feels exactly like when you give birth, that feeling of every single muscle aches, like muscles you don't even know you had ache. You're in so much kind of pain and you're not really very with it. You're very fuzzy. And then suddenly it's like you've got this little baby. And so you have all these conflicting emotions of being utterly exhausted and of being so happy. And it's exactly that. And actually in the days afterwards, I felt exactly like I did just after giving birth to Ella.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Amazing. Thanks so much for sharing that that with us there, you know. Would you say that well, what else is on the agenda? What's the year ahead for Anna?
I'm gonna be Anna the mummy, Anna the wife, and Anna the worker. I think I certainly, it's Neil's turn to do anything that he wants in terms of big running challenges. So right. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I don't know. I want to just enjoy being at home with the kids and being at home with Neil. But I also want to enjoy the moment. It's been an unbelievable week. It's been a crazy week in terms of like being on the TV and having reporters want to speak to me. It's been ridiculous, really, because people have taken an interest, and that's lovely, but it's not what I expected at all. And so I just want to enjoy that, because I'm terrible for being a planner and for wanting to plan the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And actually now I just want to enjoy now and enjoy the moment, because this is a once in a lifetime thing, really, for all of us as a family. So I just want to appreciate it.
Special words. Well, Anna, that's that basically takes in everything that we really want to cover, you know, and I really appreciate your time.
Lovely to speak to you. This is all your fault, really. You do know that. I mean, really, if it hadn't been for your race, I don't think I ever would have done it. So,
it's
all down to you.
Yeah, you know something? I think we've got a shared... there's one person in our lives over the years that's probably to blame for it all, really, because when I set up the race across Great Britain, I said, yeah, Neil won, and I was like, yeah, Neil, it's just the route, I'm not too sure on the route. So he did it the following year and he won again, and I was like, Neil, is there anything else, anything up in Scotland that you could recommend? And he pointed towards the Southern Upland Way. Within like a week, 10 days, I was there wrecking it. And then a few months later, me and Neil were on the route and checking the full thing out. And so I think really, I think we can both blame Neil.
Blame Neil. That's hilarious. It's all Neil's fault.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. But really appreciate it. It's lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.